and welcome to the Vitality Hub podcast, a place to help you thrive on all levels, both emotional, physical, and mental. I am your host, Elena, and with me today I have Naomi, who is trauma-trained psychotherapist. And today's episode will be all about nervous system, somatic work, psychosomatics, and I'm sure much more, as she will share her knowledge and experience in the field. Mm-hmm. So to start with, I always like to ask my guests, what brought them into this field? And there's always some personal story behind that. Mm-hmm. So if you mind sharing a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I lived with anxiety for as long as I could remember. I was in academia for a very long time and I was stressed. I was just stressed throughout my whole 20s. And my life was based on my achievements. So my academic achievements, I was also sporty, doing crazy adrenaline-fueled sports. And yeah, so I had to be accomplished. And eventually, my body couldn't keep up with this lifestyle anymore, and I burnt out. And that burnout was chronic fatigue, which took me 8 years to recover. And just before I burned out, I started discovering meditation, and that excited me more than physics, which I was studying. So I was like, oh, interesting. Like, this is what it feels like to be excited about something. So I then quit academia, and then I went down this healing path where I tried so many different modalities and things to heal. And 4 years down, I'm cutting this short,
but yeah, of course. Yeah.
4 years down the road, I discovered trauma and healing the nervous system. And that's when really my healing from chronic fatigue started getting better, and I started coming out of it. Yeah. But I tried so many things. And yeah, and that inspired me to become a somatic experiencing practitioner myself. So that's the trauma training modality that I am using. And yeah, along the way, I became a counselor, and now I also do craniosacral therapy, and this excites me.
So lovely. So you already started talking about where you are now. So I'm curious to hear more how you combine all these modalities and how do you help yourself and people around you with the knowledge that you acquired?
So the psychotherapy part, which is often like talk therapy, it's important for us to be able to tell the story because oftentimes we haven't been heard and that's part of the trauma. But then we need to connect that story to the story that the body is holding, which is the somatic, the nervous system part. And oftentimes we think that the stories we are creating, that is the truth, that's in the moment, but we don't realize that actually the mind is responding to the emotions and the story that's held in the body that came from the past. And we can't access that place, our body, through talking, through thinking, through gratitude practices. I mean, they're all good, right? Manifestations and positive thinking, they have all their place. But when we're talking about trauma, we have to get to the sensation, the sensation level. So that's where the somatic part comes in, where I get the clients, and I do this for me every day too, is I connect with the body and be like, okay, what sensations, what emotions, what's the energy that I'm feeling? And just to be present with that, because the body knows how to process things and release things, but it needs attention and it needs space.
Wow, there's so much that you covered there that I want to ask so many questions. Usually I ask for tips at the end, but now that you mentioned your own practice, mm-hmm. I know that we talked about this before, and I feel like it would be important for the listeners to hear mm-hmm. how you combine that and how do you regulate your nervous system in your daily life, and what does that look like?
I'm going to start with defining regulating nervous system.
Yes, that's a good one.
Because I think what's often thought of regulating the nervous system is calming the system. So you're angry or agitated, I have to calm myself. But that's actually not necessarily regulating. Regulating means that if you have an activation of some sort, it can be triggered, you know, by a past thing. It could be a present moment thing. But anyways, there's a sympathetic nervous system activation. And then in a healthy nervous system, there's a natural deactivation, and that survival response has ended and you continue with your life. Animals in the wild do that naturally. But we, growing up in modern society, we haven't taught our bodies to do this nice up and down. So we're not supposed to live constantly up here
in like complete serenity.
Serenity. We're also not supposed to live in constant stress, which we live in days, weeks, months, years, decades, you know, and that kind of takes us to like a high stress shutdown kind of place. And that's where chronic illnesses start happening. Yeah, so we can go there later.
Yeah.
But yeah, so nervous system regulation is really about learning how to ride the wave of activation and learning how to discharge it again. So calming the nervous system, what we often do is like, oh, I have to have positive thoughts, I need to meditate, is like we have an activation and then we shut that down. And that activated energy doesn't get to leave our body, so it stays stuck. And then we pile more and more and more of that on, and then we start getting anxiety, and then we start getting psychosomatic issues, irritable bowel syndrome, stomach issues being one of them as well.
Yeah, because it holds a lot of emotion.
So to be able to ride the waves, there are steps. You have to kind of learn how to build capacity to allow these emotions to come through, because most of us are disconnected down here. So we need to learn the skills to feel the body first. And then once we can feel that, we learn to feel bigger and bigger sensations. And so how I can regulate my nervous system now is when I feel anger, and it's not going anywhere, then I'm like, okay, like I need to wring a towel, I need to speak to someone, I need to voice it. So I would let it out with, I can let it out with a growl, like an animal growl, you know, I'm dealing with the primal responses that are coming up.
Because that's what animals do when they have anger, they do something and then they're good again.
So I sometimes let out hissing sounds. It really depends on the moment where I am. But sometimes it just helps to have a friend who can hold that space to just be like, fucking, fucking, fucking. And then what's important is to drop into the body as that discharges. So it's not about just letting it out. It's about then, okay, so now I've let it out. What does the opening and expansion feel like?
Because I feel like sometimes the pitfall here can be that, I don't know you if you experienced yourself, I certainly have, where I cling onto this negative feeling and I kind of like let it inside of myself and I don't fully release it and it just stays, and as days go on, I just start complaining more, being more negative, and that is like the downward spiral. And that's why I feel quite a few people in the spiritual mindfulness community, they're like, no, I'm not going to allow myself to feel those feelings, because then it ends up going into that negative spiral. But that's also unhealthy. So those, like, one is like super feeling and feeling to the point where we attach ourselves to the thing. And can't really disassociate and can't really feel it through and just come back to the neutral. And there's this other part where, no, I'm not going to feel it. I'm just going to go back to my mindfulness.
The spiritual bypassing.
Yeah, the spiritual bypass is big. It's big. And it feels so good. It feels so good. It's like, oh, can I just meditate and just do my prayers, my gratitude, and it goes away. Oh, magic. Yeah. That, like, for me, it was like, oh, I can just, whenever I would get angry, I would just focus on the gratitude and it would go away. And then I realized, oh my goodness, this is not good for the long term.
Yeah, so that's why, like, working with a skilled somatic practitioner that can teach you the skills of riding the waves. So both situations, you're actually not fully connected to the body. So in one case, you might be in rage, or like you might be stuck in a loop, but you're still not wanting those thoughts, right? You're still kind of like shaming yourself, criticizing, judging, or you get caught in the story and you're still in your mind.
Yeah.
Right?
Caught in the story. I feel like that is the defines
yeah.
it.
You're caught in the story. And the spiritual bypassing, again, as I mentioned, you're just suppressing the primal energy that's wanting to show up. I mean, sensations, emotions, they're all our body's way of communicating to us. It's all information. It's neither good nor bad. Like, anger is neither good nor bad. It's just information that we need to do something.
Yeah, and it can be setting your boundaries. It can be communicating yeah. something, feeling your needs weren't met. Like, it's a proper thing to, like, look at.
Yeah.
And one more thing before mm-hmm. we move on is that that's what I always do. When I feel something, I just either, like, do, like, gibberish, like, oh, you know, these kind of things.
Nice.
I make weird faces, and that really helps me. But then when I was in the Vipassana,
yeah.
and I had so much anger, and I went to the teacher and I said, so what's the best way to deal with this anger? Can I just, like, act out in my mind, like, smash things at least?
Oh, yeah.
And then she told me, no, because that's creating sankharas. Don't do that. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, but this is, like, doesn't make really sense.
Okay.
Because I can see her viewpoint, just observe it, let it pass, not attach. But then it's so subtle, you know, what's your take on this? Because, you know, I know you've done Vipassana, too. So
yeah, I've done Vipassana. I think it gets really nuanced at this point. And this is I'm going to talk about an advanced technique. So don't jump to doing this. Again, what's important is the connection to sensations in the body as you're doing this. So there is a technique called annihilation technique, which is all just visual, that you can, like, murder someone with your imagination, but you're actually not, you have to set the right intention, because you're actually not wanting to kill that person. It's just that situation that, like, you're actually dealing with a primal energy, because animals, they fight, right? I mean, they rarely kill each other,
yeah.
but it can happen, right? It can be quite violent. So, as long as you're connected to sensations when you do that, and then allow yourself to feel the release, then oftentimes the forgiveness for self and that person can happen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I do that.
Yeah.
You know Osho Dynamic Meditations?
I do. Hmm? Osho Nomad? Yeah.
The Dynamic Meditations.
Yeah.
I know now I don't do them, but when I used to, there was always the part where you just scream and you let everything out.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I was like, there's nothing to let out. I'm just so peaceful, because I wasn't in so spiritual bypass.
No.
Like, no anger in me.
Those are the people that harbor most anger, when they're like, I don't have anger. And I'm like, oh.
We're for a biggie. and I just would, okay, then allowing myself to bash things and scream. Mm-hmm. And I discovered so much anger. And I would mentally imagine mm-hmm. bashing some people and throwing things, and that would really bring so much release.
Yeah. Mm. Well, anger is life force. It's life, and it's like the biggest life force energy. When we suppress healthy aggression, so I'm not talking about rage. I'm not talking about going and hurting someone.
Yeah.
Like, that's inappropriate, even with words. Like, you don't do that. Like, you have to process. This is about processing our own.
With ourselves.
With yeah. ourselves. This is what I'm talking about. But this, when we suppress anger, it, like, you can tell with people who've got their anger suppressed. Because
they're just not alive.
They're not alive. Their voices are really quiet, and, like, there's lack of movement. And run, if that's your teacher.
Would you say?
But, you know, like, someone who's actually, who lives with all of these energies, like, they're, like, they're moving, they're alive, they're funny, they're spontaneous, you know?
Yeah, and they can act in the full range of
yeah.
their emotions. So that's lovely. So we have this middle range where we're, like, regulated nervous system, right?
Yeah.
And then up here is the hypo-arouse when we are
yeah.
angry. What is else happening? Like, how can people spot that they are hypo-aroused and that they need to self-regulate?
So, like, all these survival responses, fight, flight, and freeze, they're there for a purpose. And it's good when we need them. Let's say we have, yes, let's go even bigger and like war and genocide. I mean, we're supposed to feel like angry at those kinds of things. Like that gets this primal response, right? But I don't want to live stuck up there. Like, I don't want to just like constantly the 24 hours be angry at the situation, because that's not healthy. So, you know, like feeling it is okay, but then do stuff to also to take care of myself, to nurture myself so that I can also sleep and socialize, and I'm also in a calm, like calm state, yeah, and like a rest and digest kind of state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then below that, there's the hypo aroused, yeah, right? I feel like people don't really talk about that because everybody was talking about like,
yeah,
flight or flight, you know, fight or flight.
Yeah.
But the freeze is a big one. And you mentioned that that's where actually the health issues mostly stand for,
yeah,
when we drop into this one.
Well, both. Like, it's not good to be up here the whole time. Oh, but yeah, like when we end up doing this like zigzag of like, stress, crash, because the nervous system will put a brake. It can't sustain that kind of high stress and anxiety. It will put on the brakes, and then you end up in freeze. And then you come out again, and then stress, and then you crash again. And after a while, like, the body's not meant to be in that state for a long time, because whether you're in fight, flight, or freeze, the body's not in healing mode. It's not in the rest and digest, you're not getting restorative sleep, your cells are not regenerating.
You can't really digest food properly.
Your sex drive is gone. You don't want to socialize. And those are all part of the parasympathetic nervous system. They're two branches, but the rest and digest and socializing part of the parasympathetic nervous system is offline. And for very good reasons. If a tiger is, we still have the same nervous system from when saber-toothed tigers were chasing us, right? So let's say a saber-toothed tiger is chasing us. If we sleep or stop to eat or have sex or stop to like have a conversation,
we're dead.
We get eaten. So that's why those parts of our system shut down for very good reason. Once the tiger is gone, our body is meant to recover from that high intensive stress, except modern life doesn't allow for that coming back down.
Yeah, and also when you can see in the animal world, animals have that freeze response as a way to pretend to be dead, to not be attacked.
Well, not to be too, I think... animals don't like eating dead animals, except and also to not feel being eaten. So you go numb.
Yeah, so you disassociate.
Disassociate, and like the blood goes all internal so that you don't lose blood as an animal is eating you.
Mm.
So yeah, everything kind of goes inward. And again, if we had a car crash and we were trapped in something and our leg broke, we want that freeze response in that situation. You know, so they're appropriate in given situations in short.
Yeah. So I imagine there are different, like from my own body, I noticed there are different ways for me to regulate when I'm here or when I'm here.
Yeah.
So what would you say, like, I don't know, I know there are so many ways to regulate.
Oh my God,
it's hard to say, but I know for someone who's listening, like, what would be three ways to regulate when they're up here in their hypo aroused, and three ways in their when they're
That's a good question. Yeah, so I think we already talked about like how to regulate when you're up here. It's actually to learn how to feel those big emotional energies that are coming through you. It can be stomping, running, punching. It can be vocal or like all of that together. It can be processing it with a therapist or a friend where you get to say as many cuss words as you want to. It can be imagining. So that would be three. Imagine you are, it sounds violent. but like I the way, if someone's like in my imagination is really annoying, I place them like in front of me and then I like throw a fireball at them. But it's only that image of that person, that's that situation that's annoying me.
Okay.
And then like I'm like, ah, okay. So now that's the out of my mind.
And how do you feel when you meet that person in real life?
Oh, and of course I'm not going to tell them anything.
No, but, of course. But, like, but do you see a change in your...
Yeah, like immediately afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes we have to voice things, but if we can't voice, we can voice it out imaginary, right?
Exactly. But again, you don't do that with the person in front of that person. You do your own. This is for yourself, so that when you meet that person again, you're coming from a more grounded, aware, self-aware place, and you can communicate better.
Yeah, I feel like that really helps me. Just voicing whatever I want to the, and allow myself to go to the extreme. Because normally I don't swear, I don't like talk mean things, but I do need to allow some parts of me to just voice all of their things and allow them, you know, like there's this exercise for people who have chronic pain to just journal from the place of as if they were 5 years old and they're like not thinking about how they're coming across, and just allow yourself to go into the most negative place.
Yeah.
And that really allows to release this emotions, and then the chronic pain also subsides. So that's something we can talk about later.
There's pain. Oftentimes anger is just the surface, the surface emotion, and underneath that there's actually hurt. Like, I'm lonely, or you know, I'm scared to be alone, I'm scared to be rejected, this really hurts and I'm sad. And then there's a belief underneath that of like, I believe that I don't matter, that I'm not lovable, you know, and that's why I'm angry. So you can go through those steps as well of processing.
Are you aware of the internal family systems?
Yeah, I did family systems. So not IFS, but Bowen's family systems. So I did the genogram as well. So I went back in my generations.
Okay, lovely. Yeah. So for me, what it sounds, the anger is like the protector.
Yeah.
And then behind it is the exiled part that is like the wounded child.
Exactly.
The wounded part. And we have to go through... First, I get the permission of the protector to feel what it feels and acknowledge that, okay, I know that anger is good for me here because you're protecting and you're trying to meet some needs of mine.
Yeah.
And then only you can go to the exiled part to feel the hurt, the pain, and hold space for that.
Exactly, yeah. And that protective part can be just an animal expression, or it can be verbal or imaginary.
Yeah.
But it needs to be honored. And I think we're so scared. We have to be put together. I can't say fuck. You know, I can't hit things. You know, we get so scared. But it's in that expression, that primal expression, that we can start releasing what's underneath and move through it.
Love it.
So, okay, so that's layer.
Let's go.
To freeze. Okay.
You freeze.
In the frozen state, again, what's super important is... learning how to connect and feel the body. And you start to come out of freeze, you have to go through sympathetic arousal, and then like you have to go backwards basically. But if you've been chronically frozen, you have a chronic illness, chronic fatigue, or ME, fibromyalgia, MS, like any of that stuff, you have to really start slowly. Because the nervous system doesn't have much capacity to feel. It's already in an overwhelmed state. So that's when you start with yoga nidras, or like containment exercises, like where you just learn to like connect through your own touch. I mean, I'm going a lot faster than we would, but orienting, I mean, this is... We should do this all the time anyways, but like orienting, connecting with the environment. And if I look at something pretty, like what happens to my body? Oh, it starting to breathe a little slower as I'm looking at the flowers out there. Like, I start feeling more at ease. And yeah, it's a much slower, gentler approach to come out.
But you said that that's what I've heard as well from others. Mm-hmm. That you have to activate yourself in that state to go into this other mode. But then you're saying that you should go very gentle and very slow, as if you're kind of calming yourself down. But if you're already in apathy, you're depressed, mm-hmm. you're feeling, you have no energy, no vitality, you don't want to do anything, you're just nothing, meh.
Yeah.
So the first step for that person would be?
Is to just learn to connect to the five senses.
Come back to the senses, to the body, because you're disassociated. Yeah. So you're basically first learning to come back to the body.
Yeah, and then you start learning to feel like tiny amounts of arousals. Like, we don't go into like childhood trauma, the biggest events. It's like, I misplaced my keys and that was frustrating. Okay, so how does that frustration impact your body? Like, what are the sensations of frustrations? Where is the frustration? How big of a space does it occupy? What's the size and the shape or the color? Does it have temperature? Does it pulse? Does it vibrate? Like, all these things, just to get familiar with that activation sensation.
Mm, and to become comfortable with being activated.
Yeah. And then you come out of it. You don't stay there for very long. You come out of it, and we do this thing called resourcing in somatic experiencing, and that's called titrating or pendulating, where you go into the activation, and then we start feeling something that's actually pleasant and joyful. And what does that feel? In a frozen state, you can feel neither expansion nor contraction. You're kind of just stuck.
Frozen.
So we have to work. I always start with working with the expansion first, with the joy, like, what's comfortable? Oh, what do you notice? Oh, my shoulders relax. Oh, my jaw relaxes. Oh, my breathing starts opening. Those kinds of things. And once we have capacity to feel and we found a resource for that person, then we're like, okay, let's explore some more difficult sensations. And I try to avoid the word negative, because again, they're not good or bad. They just are. It's just that we need to get familiar and comfortable riding, being in touch with those sensations.
And kind of seeing the need behind it and meeting it, like, with no bad parts, no bad sensations, no bad experiences. I love that. Okay, I feel like that's pretty clear. You come back to your body, to your senses, learn to feel different levels of emotion.
Yeah.
And is there anything else?
Where a skilled trauma trained or a somatic practitioner comes in, is they can then take you further. So then comes the questions of, okay, if that sensation had a voice, if that anger here had a voice, what would it say? If there are any images or memories that spontaneously occur, let them happen. What are they? Or how old are those? Is that part? Does it feel like, how young are you?
Yeah, communicating with that, going deeper.
And then I can bring in the inner child and stuff. And that's when we do trauma healing work.
Yeah. I feel like trauma is a word that's been appearing everywhere now.
Mm.
Generational trauma, childhood trauma, trauma.
Developmental trauma.
Yeah. Everywhere is trauma. So a little bit about this trauma thing. I guess it's unavoidable.
Yeah. We all have trauma. It to some extent.
Yeah, it's not the big T trauma, but you can get trauma from other experiences. So what to you is trauma? How do you define it?
There are many definitions of trauma. Some of the ones that I love are Trauma is a survival response that didn't get to complete. And why I love that definition is because that means that when we complete that survival response that got stopped, the trauma then gets healed and disappears. I mean, this is not a one-time thing, like you have to do the layers, but I love that definition because it means that we don't have to live with trauma. Like, we have a choice to actually move through them. But we have to go to that place where it got stuck and then let the body finish the process.
Allow it to do what it needed to do.
Allow it, yeah. Mm-hmm,
lovely. I love that one,
right?
Too.
And then, then there are definitions of like trauma happens when something happens too fast, too quick, and too overwhelming and stuff that.
That's normally what I perceive as trauma.
But there's so many different types of trauma. There's birth trauma, prenatal trauma. There is no emotion or memory associated to that because it's in, at this point, the brain hasn't developed. The fetus hasn't developed.
So how do you know if it's, prenatal birth trauma with the person that you're working? Or when it happened before they were able to remember, like up until 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah, it oftentimes shows up as just this general state of anxiety or hypervigilant, and you don't know why you're constantly anxious. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason, but you're always worried about something.
Okay.
And
I feel like a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, I had birth trauma. I worked through that. So what happened in my case was my mom's birth canal wasn't open enough. That's what we presume. And I was trying and trying, and my mom was trying to push me out, but I wouldn't come out. And eventually my heart started failing and they had to have a C-section and I came out. And I lived, So for me, maybe it wasn't so much constant anxiety, but I had this pressure in my head my whole life. And I didn't know where it came from, what it was. And then I worked with a prenatal and birth therapist.
And okay, there are such people who specialize specifically at... Okay.
Yes. And I didn't even connect it with the pressure in my head, but I just knew I had a difficult birth. My mom had a difficult time. And I was like something... I was curious. I wanted to work through it. And it turns out that this pressure was from like squeezing and squeezing. So also babies that come out with forceps would have like this pressure that they're living with. So what I ended up doing with that therapist is actually rebirthing like my whole experience so that my body got a new imprint of that event.
Ah, interesting. So, like, that reminds me of something as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, how's your head?
It feels so out there. But that layer of pressure has not come back since I've done it. And I'm getting goosebumps because
I can see.
It's so magical. Yeah. And I have layers of different kinds of pressure around my head. And every time I work on a piece it can be ancestral, it can be birth trauma. Our body stores it in wherever it is, that tension and pressure. And until you do the work, and then it's not even memory sometimes, it's just like you just feel the release and you stay with it and then it's gone. And when it's gone for a few days, you know that you've completed it. It doesn't come back.
Because I feel with a lot of people that I talk with who's been working with somatic practices, IFS, hypnotherapy, all these kind of modalities, for some it's very quick, like for you, and it's gone, it's solved.
But I've been doing this work for so long. This is like further, I did this birth trauma thing 5 years after I started my own somatic healing. So now I heal very quickly. I move through things very quickly. My body knows what to do given the space. But at the beginning, you move slower and it takes more sessions.
Okay. So we can talk a bit about psychosomatic like pain and issues.
But before we go there, can I also talk about another type of trauma?
Of course, yeah, sure.
This is the one that people don't recognize as trauma. Ooh. They're like, I grew up in a calm household, like no one was shouting, like everyone was happy and peaceful, and that's always a warning sign for me when people say that. But it's like, were emotions allowed to be expressed in your family? Like, what happened when you were angry? Were you told you have no reason to be angry, or go to your room and come out when you're not angry anymore, or when you're crying? Like, what do you have to cry about? Those kinds of sayings, over time, it just tells us that we are not safe to express our emotional needs. And that's our authentic expression as children.
Yeah.
And all of those emotions, if we just keep it as a pure energy sensation level, they get stuck. And you pile on and pile on and pile on more pressure in your body.
And how does it usually manifest in a person? Like, if somebody is listening, like, oh, I had that in my family, but how do I know? I'm kind of okay, everything's okay.
You know? Until you're not. Or you don't know how to handle life stressors. Like something super stressful would happen and you would kind of lose it, or like there are so many ways people navigate the situation. Some people like shrink and become like more socially isolated, you know, they do less and less and less so that they're not triggered because they don't know how to handle those emotions. Some people burst outward and get angry as soon as like someone touches a part in them. Some people just live in chronic anxiety and stress the whole time. But yeah, you can tell.
But it's hard for someone
like muscle.
You
know, that armoring that men and women can wear. That's also protection.
Yeah, it's though I do want to acknowledge that it's very hard to notice in yourself, in myself, when that happens, because I lived with this constant like need to control things to make sure that everything's okay and just like managing. That's why I was high achiever in everything that I did, because I just wanted to prove that, you know, I'm worthy and stuff.
Same.
And I, to the point where that was just who I was. I didn't know any other way of functioning. And yeah, it's really hard to...
You know what? What happens after decades of not acknowledging or knowing about this? That's when the body starts to break. Because the body is knocking on the door constantly, saying like, hey, I don't like this situation. Hey, this gives me anxiety. Hey, this makes me angry. But we're not feeling it. So it keeps on knocking louder and louder and louder. And eventually we get the flu and it doesn't heal for 2 weeks. We have injuries if we're an athletic person, and the injuries don't heal and we get more and more injured, or we get chronic migraines, or digestive issues, irritable bowel syndrome, any kind of like syndrome, which is like a collection of things, arthritis, like you get joint pain,
autoimmune issues, chronic fatigue,
all those things like start happening. Because when we suppress emotions, we're actually in survival mode. Like there's a low-grade survival mode running our system, and we're not able to repair, digest, heal, do all those things. And if we continue not listening to those signs, then you get then life stops you. Your body stops you, basically. And that's where I ended up, and that was a big lesson and wake-up call for me. And sad, it doesn't have to be this way, but sadly, a lot of people don't learn this lesson until they
reach their bottom.
Yeah, depression is another one too. Yeah.
Whew.
There's so much to talk about in this realm.
And also, it just rings so true, because I see so many cases, and in my own life, when I was just going, I had both of my knee injuries, and I couldn't walk. Like, basically, life just literally stopped me, and I had to be at home, and it healed so long. And that really taught me how to slow down.
Yeah, slowing down. That's another piece. You really need to slow down, connect with our body. Our body doesn't heal like this in a fast pace.
Yeah, though at the same time, it's very easy to say and very hard to do.
It's so hard. Yeah, there's not an off switch.
we make it sound like it's so easy, but it's actually so hard. It's a lifelong journey.
Yes.
And it's never like, I solved it once and it's gone.
Yeah.
And with digestion.
I'm still an overachiever and find myself like in that place. But the thing is, I catch myself earlier. I don't go that far anymore. But yes, I never tell clients, just relax.
It doesn't work.
The most unhelpful thing you can tell someone or be told.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there is... The nervous system doesn't have an off switch. We all heard of... neuroplasticity, right?
Yeah.
And how neuroplasticity is this amazing thing which works with meditation, and we can rewire our brain to think more positive, be more calm, whatever, yada, 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 all those positive benefits. But neuroplasticity also works the other way. And if we live stressed out, anxious lives, or chronically suppress our emotions, or are in a chronic stressful state, then our nervous system learns to be in that state too.
Yeah.
So then we've dug these like really deep tracks of like being in constant anxiety. And to come out of that takes practice.
Takes new
you have to
pathways,
and that takes practice. Yeah. Mm.
What's your take on psychedelics? Because I feel like that, you know, neuroplasticity, psychedelics, all of that it can help to speed up that process of building new neural pathways to the new way of being. From my own journey, that was, I didn't do much of it, just like two sessions that's according to the science, is most helpful. And for me, that was a big change.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on psychedelics.
Yeah.
I think what's often missed is the need for preparation before doing the psychedelics, and then the integration. And we throw around the word integration, but basically what integration means is to allow the nervous system to integrate, to learn the shift. So now we've experienced something big, what's possible, or we've had aha moments. And if we then go out into the world and continue living our same, like without resting, without allowing our body to digest this information, we revert back to the same way as we were. And integration also means, so what are the things that I'm going to apply, the new things that I'm going to do to make sure that what I experienced in a psychedelic session then becomes part of my life going forward. Because our walls, our boundaries, our defense mechanisms, they all come back. Psychedelics temporarily lift it.
Yeah.
And we get to like access a deeper state of consciousness, a deeper state of ourselves, which is wonderful. But as when it wears off, chunk.
Oh, for sure.
Everything is back. And I haven't done ayahuasca myself. Some of those more stronger plant medicines. And preparation is so important, because if we don't have the capacity to process such big awakening sensations, emotions move through, we dysregulate ourselves again and we traumatize ourselves again. And in that case, it's not therapeutic anymore. So doing the prep work, and this is what I talked about at the beginning of the podcast, is you have to learn to tolerate the uncomfortable emotions and sensations in your body, whether it's pain, anger, frustrations. Like, you have to learn to be able to tolerate that and ride those waves. If you can't, and then have this big opening in an ayahuasca ceremony
or any other
psychedelic trips, then it's not really healing.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I feel like a lot of people think of psychedelics and they just take it and like it does the job for them.
Yeah.
But no, actually, I see it as a step further along in your healing journey. When you are already working with someone, you're actively working through some issues.
Yeah.
And only then, when you hit some kind of a wall, a bottom, then you can, okay, let's explore how this is with psychedelics. And that's what I did for myself. I did IFS healing with my different parts, and I just learned that I can't really access some parts because I just had such a shutdown of locking down those emotions. And only then I did a therapeutic way of psychedelics, where it's completely black out, just with therapeutic music, with yourself, proper preparation, the whole journey, and then integration. And yeah, I guess when I talk about psychedelics, I only talk about this
time.
Yeah, not just like, oh, let's get together with friends and just do it and have some experiences. I mean, that's fine, but...
Or just ceremonies and hoping. You know, there's no magic pill for a cure, and there's no magic one ceremony, plant medicine ceremony session that will heal you.
Yeah.
So people end up going back and back and back there because they're not integrating, they're not healing from those plant ceremonies. But yeah, healing is possible without plant ceremonies, but if you use it as a tool in a very intentional way, it can be wonderful.
Lovely. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I'm glad we touched that one. So is there something else you would like to talk about? We talked about the nervous system regulation. Yeah. Maybe you'd like to share some of your practices, because you shared with me how you do your morning rituals and how do you protect that space for yourself to regulate. What would you like to discuss?
Ah, good question. Maybe there's so many things that I do.
Yeah.
But I think the general theme really that goes through my day, through my days, is really listening to my body. There are periods, of course, where I have more work to do and I know I'm going to be tired. But then I always ask myself, what am I going to do at the end to take care of myself so that I don't stay in that stressed out state? Because yeah, I can feel my nervous system get wired, and then if I don't stop myself, I'm like, dishes, I need cleaning, and then like more work, emails, you know, and I stay in that like aroused state.
Work mode,
yeah. Do. And so when I start feeling that, and if I can, then I would take yoga nidra naps during the day.
Lovely.
Or just sit down or lie on the floor until like I start feeling my, like connecting somatically with my body, connecting how the contact between my body and what I'm sitting on, or if I'm lying, then with the floor, and just wait until the nervous system like settles. And I know when it does that, when my belly starts gurgling or my breathing starts widening or start yawning, and I'm like, oh, okay,
that's good.
To take those breaks, I think that's another thing too. Take many, many breaks. I used to be so proud of working 10 hours straight. It's not good.
Not even productive.
It's not even productive either, yeah. To take breaks every 20 minutes to look out and connect with my breath, and then every hour to take 15-minute breaks. it sounds like a lot. Most people that are in like the corporate working world feel like 15 minutes every hour, that's a lot. But at the end of the day, I'm not exhausted. I'm not burnt out.
Speak someone who has experience.
And I know what burnout it looks like and feels like. So, I mean, this is a vast, it's a concept that people don't get.
You don't get until you get it.
You get it, yeah. But it's vital. Like, if you understand biology, like your brain, your brain and your body, if you keep on working that same part of the brain, that same gear, eventually that gear wears out and you have to shift to another gear or another mode to give that a break. But the brain still actually keeps on processing, but it happens in the background. So that's when you have like creative shower moments, ideas, you know, ideas and stuff like that.
Work with your subconscious mind. It really does magic. Yeah. If you have something, I like to give my subconscious mind a task before I go to sleep. And when I wake up, it would be there.
Yeah.
And that was so useful in my uni days, in my school, because I would just read something right before I sleep. And in the morning, I already knew everything.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was like magic. That's why I didn't really have to study a lot. I just like, I could just do things like that.
Yeah. I think for those things, you just have to be in experiment mode, experiment with life.
See
you
what
have
works.
To try it and see what works. And not just once, but like try it for 2-3 weeks. Set yourself reminders and see. And if it doesn't work, throw it away and try another thing. But it's really trial and error.
And maybe even involve your close friends with that. Like, hey, I've heard on this podcast that, you know, you should take breaks or take yoga nidra breaks. Even with your coworkers, you can go, if there's space for that, let's take a break and do this yoga nidra practice. Or Dr. Huberman calls it the non-sleep deep rest. For those of you, if you don't want to say like yoga nidra because it sounds so woo-woo, and that's why he invented this other name, non-sleep deep rest, because it sounds not like so woo-woo and it doesn't have the mantras and stuff. It's like more westernized, let's say. To try that, see how your body feels.
Yeah.
Try to notice where are you in your nervous system. How can you regulate from that and just noticing?
Yeah, and the difference between why I don't take naps and why I take yoga nidra breaks, or what was it called? Non-sleep depressed, is because if I'm working and I'm feeling exhausted, and if I just go lie down, then my brain is still like da da da, and I'm not really getting a rest. So my nervous system is still activated. So I just found it's easier for my nervous system to calm down or to come down if I listen to, it kind of feels like a guided meditation.
It is.
Right? Yeah. I'm just lying there, but someone is telling me where to focus on different parts of the body. And some yoga nidras like use breath as well. But it's giving my mind a different task. That's kind of how I see it. And that way I get that rest that I need in those 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's similar to hypnotherapy. I do self-hypnosis instead of yoga nidra because it just works for me so well, because my body knows how to get quickly into this alpha brainwave state and then my body's like...
Yeah, and that's the thing too. The more often you do it, the faster it happens, because your body's like, oh, I know this. I know how to do this.
Yeah, and you can also use NLP to like... anchor this feeling in your body. So now I have like it anchored in my finger. So when I need that, I'm just like pressing it, and I really feel the calmness washing away. And some of my clients press it here, and some of them want to encode this feeling here. When I do hypnotherapy sessions, I just ask them to encode this relaxation somewhere, because I often hear that I haven't been so relaxed in ever, and that's what happens. Okay, that's great. We talked a bit about IBS, digestive issues, and trauma. Can we talk a bit more about that? What's your take on, you know, obviously it isn't connected to trauma, psychosomatics. Is there anything specific that you found working with clients or maybe with yourself? I know we talked about the digestive stuff.
Yeah, I see the digestion as part of overall health. Like I'm not specialized in just working with the digestion. But oftentimes when you have digestion issues too, you might have skin issues, you might not be sleeping well, you're not emotionally regulated, you might be having migraines,
brain fog and focus.
And yeah. that collection of what's happening to me is a sign of nervous system dysregulation. And and oftentimes old trauma, whether it's birth, developmental, or, you know, like childhood trauma, or, you know, and oftentimes that gets passed down through the generation. So it's kind of tied up with generational trauma too. Sometimes it's shock trauma, like something really big happened. Maybe your father died when you were 6 years old, and that was, and you were really close to your father, and that was a big impact. That would be a shock trauma. Mm. And if that hasn't been processed at that age, you might be carrying that too. But all of that again, and then modern life, like being in a constant state of stress, like I have to work 40 hours a week on the same thing, that in itself like creates long-term stress, and that creates trauma as well. And then being chronically ill creates trauma too. Like any stress, whether it's external or internal or chemical or physiological stress, like that can create trauma. So
I had a recent podcast episode with another guest, Robin, and she was talking how like perimenopause and all the hormones, it's all stress. But I feel like we hear this stress everywhere, and it's kind of stressful just to think about stress.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like I'm saying, and I'm like feeling heightened talking about it. So what we want to do is like slowly, like again, this titration, like, okay, so we're in this state. How often do you actually spend time enjoying life?
Bam.
You know,
I feel like this is a big
one. You have IBS and you're anxious about, like if you just want to focus on that, like you're in constant stomach pain, you don't know what,
at
this point it's like your body is like, it's so loud that you can't ignore it, and it's impacting your life, and you're miserable. Like, when are you taking time to just relax? Do something like just relax. Like maybe go to the movies. You know,
dance, move. Do some aromatherapy.
Yeah, go for a coffee with friends. Maybe you're into manicures and pedicures.
Oh, you know? I am for sure.
I'm not. But you know, when do you like? If it's summer, lie on the grass and stare into the sky.
Yeah, again, it sounds very nice, but as someone who has been struggling with IBS for all of my life, I would say, it doesn't sound that easy, that simple.
It's not that easy and simple.
Because I remember days when I would even, like, I would meditate, I would do everything, even in Vipassana, I was, like, not doing anything. I was always just, like, observing my breath. And my digestion was really not easy on me because I couldn't control the food there because food for me is like the main thing.
Yeah.
But then when I'm traveling, it's harder to do that.
Yeah.
What's your own personal experience with digestion? Because I remember we talked a bit about that, if you mind sharing.
Oh, I'm healing my gut right now.
Oh, you are still, okay.
Yeah. Not to be stressed out about... I mean, it's a journey. There are going to be times where you're going to be frustrated and stressed out, but to learn to then come out of that as soon as possible. Because that stress of, I need to take this many supplements, I need to, like, I can't eat this and this, otherwise I'll react, like, all that stress is preventing you from healing. So, yes.
So it's again in the mind.
In the mind,
like,
you know.
Always.
Do the things that the naturopath, the doctor, whatever, acupuncturist, whoever you're seeing is telling you. But also listen to your body when it says, like, this is too much. Because we can't force the speed of healing. Like we, like my, I get a backlash from my body if I do too many therapies and take too many supplements and I'm too regimented, it rebels.
How?
I'm unhappy, I'm frustrated, I'm moody, you know, and like just life is shit.
If you take too many therapies.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
I get stressed out. I look at my calendar and I have like 3 appointments and then I have to like figure out how to work around that because it cuts my work time, you know. And then I can't hang out with friends. I can't have dinner because I have to make my own food. So where is that middle ground for you where you can give yourself a little bit of slack? You know, sometimes you have to be strict for 3 months if it's 3 months, 3 weeks or whatever in an acute situation.
Yeah, it depends.
But if it's months,
But that's what happens with chronic illnesses. And that's why I really feel for people who have fibromyalgia and MS and all these debilitating issues where you feel like you can't really live your life because what if you go out somewhere and you need to, you know, you have diarrhea somewhere, you know, it's like living with those kind of conditions. And I do feel that it's very hard and somehow to find moments of joyfulness in that and to give yourself, a bit of a slack, I guess.
And when you're in that chronic state, those symptoms are not going to disappear. So being okay with being sick and having those symptoms. So right now, I did go through a very strict period where I didn't eat out. I cooked everything for myself. But now I'm kind of like I'm healing. I don't have to be as strict, and I still react. I still get an itchy skin. I get bloatedness. But I'm not stressed out about that anymore.
It doesn't affect your quality of life. So you can be in pain and not suffer.
Exactly.
By not focusing on the pain.
So how can you still live and be okay with your chronic issues? And when I had chronic fatigue for the first 4 years, I socially isolated myself. My life became smaller and smaller and smaller and boxed in because I was so scared to go out to feel exhausted. I was so scared of overdoing anything. Like walking around the block oftentimes was exhausting. I lost like the vitality, I lost life. And I remember one of the therapists I saw said, "So what? You're tired." We all get tired. And I got so scared of being tired that any sign of tiredness like sent alarm bells off in my mind.
So it seems like you're resting and you're taking care of yourself, but actually it was the opposite, right?
Yeah, I was resting and taking care, but with the anxiety of like, don't feel like, I can't feel tiredness at all. Like that's me going backwards. That's a bad sign. So learning that exhaustion and tiredness is part of life, and that's part of the healing journey for me. Like it was like, okay, I'm resting, I'm healing, and then I'll do an activity and I'll feel tired, and that's okay. Then I take care of myself again. So it's like this like wave, like up and down process. But I think we oftentimes get stuck with like, it has to be a linear thing and it has to be fast. And then we get disappointed and we get anxious that we still have symptoms.
And I do all these treatments and I see all these therapists and I'm still not perfectly fine
like
all the time.
Fucking body, like it should heal, you know?
And
we're not honoring the journey.
I love that.
You know, and having stomach pain, and bloatedness, and in my case, rashes as part of healing the gut is part of the journey. And notice how they become less. how they're not as painful anymore further down the line.
And focus on the other part, because it's very easy to just, I feel like I became so hyper aware of my gut that any little thing, I'm so aware of it. And that's what happens for people who go through post-infectious, you know, gut diseases, that you just become so hyper aware of everything that a slightest bit of something is just already triggering. And that's what they found, scientists, that what happens for people who have IBS, they're just hyper aware. Yeah. They don't necessarily have the more gas or more stomach issues. Yeah. They just are hyper aware of this area.
Yeah.
And just for me, that's why hypnotherapy for me was so effective, because I could ease into that and direct my attention elsewhere and just put like a cozy, relaxing blanket over my belly imaginatively, and it really helped. Yeah. So I feel like that's very similar to what you're sharing.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, everything needs the proper intention. So that's why doing something else that feels pleasant and joyful, like going to the park, connecting with nature, getting a massage, you know, those all start to take our mind off of that hyper-vigilant focus on our health struggles.
Yeah, love that. So I want to end with...
And there's so much more.
Oh, I'm sure we'll do more podcasts. We both live here.
There's also like self-touch, you know, like, oh, there's so many amazing modalities.
Yeah, and it would be very interesting to explore more of the somatic work, somatic experiencing, to maybe give a taste of what it's like for people to do themselves.
Definitely.
Yeah, like there's so much. Even like the legacy traumas, I feel like, people are starting to talk about it, but it's not so mainstream yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I want to end with one question, and that is, what is vitality for you? How do you define it? What do you see it?
Okay. Vitality for me is when I can feel the whole range of emotions, sensations, life, like... I can get really pissed off and angry, but at the same time, like, I can also feel so much joy and pleasure. And I'm mostly in a state of joy and pleasure. And there are pockets of uncomfortable life situations that happen to me, but most of the time I have this like life spark, which I didn't have. I didn't have that when I had chronic fatigue. So like, this bubbliness, like this like joy and excitement for life, like that's vitality. And then being able to be spontaneous and curious and connected to people, those are all like healthy signs of a regulated nervous system, and that vitality is flowing through the body.
Let's take a moment to feel that in, because that is so juicy and so true, to work through those little pockets, to be able to go there, work through that,
and
experience the full range. I love the emotions, the full range of life. Ah, I love that. So where can people find you? Where can they connect with you? I will put the links also in the show notes, but just to say what's the best way?
Yeah, right now, Instagram, you can get in touch with me there. It's _flourish_counseling. That's spelled CounselLing _. That might change, but I also have a website, flourishcounseling.com.
Okay, and so, I'll put the links down. Lovely. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom and your energy. I can feel you have so much energy, so much vitality. And after this, we're actually going contact dance.
Yes.
So we're going to experience all of that.
With movement.
Yes. So thank you so much for listening. Mm-hmm. Please do share this episode with your loved ones, with your friends. Because as you're getting educated on this, it's very important to surround yourself with people who are on a similar page with you, so you can work through the same thing, so that they would understand why you need to feel your anger, why you need to feel your sadness, and for them to be more equipped at holding that space for you and also for themselves. Because the more we have people on this earth who can feel the full range of their emotions, the less illness we'll have, the less depression, the less apathy, the less violence, because we'll be able to work through those different states and bring ourselves back to the regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very important. And also share in the comments what is your takeaway from the episode, because I feel like it's very easy to consume information and not really ground ourselves in that and really take it away. And when I am trying to do this practice where I take away the like few notes from each podcast that I listen to, and I just found that really advances my learning and understanding of the subject. So that is my wish and hope for you, to live a vital life full of joy, full ranges of emotions, and see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Oh, this was so much fun.
Yeah, I loved listening to all these things. And okay, we have to get going to the contact improv.
Okay, I'll get changed.